By the grace of God, we're finding ourselves, my friends, in the midst of the fifth plague when the angel came out and trumpeted, and a star fell onto the earth, and the well of the abyss was open. And from the well of the abyss came up smoke, and from the smoke came out locusts with that idiomorphic form. We already explained a great deal about these things, and we further elaborated on the specific point where it says only those who have rebelled against God will be harmed. We used another prophecy to provide an image of that harmful event, a prophecy of Moses found in Deuteronomy. In that specific prophecy, God says, if you do not obey the commandments of the Lord, then you will be struck with insanity, madness, and blindness, and confusion of heart, and numerous other states and ills, as we read in Deuteronomy 28:28. However, a very interesting and noteworthy point provided in this sacred text is this: all these evils will not befall on the people who have the seal of God, but on those who do not have the seal of God on their foreheads. All those people who do not have the seal of God on their forehead, which is the seal of the Holy Cross. Are you aware of the steady de-Christianization occurring steadily in our contemporary world? This constant de-Christianization happens on a global level, not excluding our country. This is very evident. Anyone can see this, and the damage is such that people will no longer be baptized. They will not have the Holy Cross as their seal. They will not believe in the power of the cross. Likewise, even those who have been baptized, if they have denied the power of the precious cross in their lives, they cannot claim that they have this seal, regardless of their baptism. Only those who will have the seal of the precious cross, they will escape all these evils. And a question may arise, how is this selection going to take place so the people of God will not be harmed through this? I will remind you something that our Lord said in the 21st chapter of Luke, verse 36. Therefore, stay awake. Watch therefore and pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape all these things that will come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man. These words of the Lord are very revealing, and they come to give the answer to this precise point of this question. He says, stay vigilant, be watchful, meaning you must have the measure of faith inside of you, the expectation of the Son of God from heaven, being always watchful, prayerful, supplicating that you may be counted worthy to escape all these things that will come to pass. So we can escape all these future evils. So we can escape from the plagues recorded in the book of the Revelation. The word of the Lord is very overt about this, that you may be found worthy to escape from all these things that will take place in the form of a plague, and to stand in front of the Son of Man. So when he comes back at the end to stand in front of him, will all this fulfillment of your holy expectation and your hope. So this is the answer. Now, how would this come to pass? Only God knows. Much like the resurrection of the dead, how would this exactly come about? Only God knows. Exactly how will a body that became dust and burned to ashes, disappeared, how will it reconnect and be restructured, reassembled? This only God knows. His goodness, his omniscience, and his omnipotence will bring these things to fruition. But let's pay attention to this catalog of ills, those that are mentioned in the book of Deuteronomy. And if you paid close attention, you probably remember that most of these plagues were primarily of a psychological dimension. It is a state that usually strikes people who do not have true and alive faith. Today we ask, why do we have such a sharp increase of psychological illnesses? My friends, tons upon tons of so-called relaxing pills are consumed, tons of drugs, because people live in a state of anxiety, a state of stress, a state of a dysfunctioning nervous system. The soul is in a constant state of explosion and confusion. And someone may ask, why? What causes all this? It seems to be the type of thing that God threatens people with in Deuteronomy. And quite frankly, a believer, a true believer, cannot possibly have a psychological illness. I remember a while back, a young man, one of the young people who surround us, who are children of God, who want to live and develop a spiritual life. And at some point, he suffered a nervous breakdown of some sort, and he ended up in a neurological clinic. This goes back many, many years. So he entered a well-known neurological clinic in Larissa. I went to visit him, and I did this a number of times. And I specifically remember him telling me that the doctor told him something very, very profound. And this is to the credit of the doctor. When the doctor saw him reading the Holy Scriptures, reading some religious literature magazines, the doctor told him, if you were a true Christian, you would never need to come to this place. This is true. Truer than true. Yes, a true Christian, and a true Christian is not someone who simply goes to church, confesses, or takes Holy Communion. No, my friends, this is not necessarily the true Christian, but the one who grasped the spirit of the gospel and lives accordingly in absolute freedom and in absolute gratitude and love. He's the true Christian, the one who does not have a divided or split personality between God and the world, between the spirit and matter. The man who truly grasped the meaning and the spirit of the gospel, and this man is not in danger of developing psychological illnesses. When he believes not only in God, but in the providence of God, an element that is lacking in 9 out of our 10 Christians today. The Lord said, do not be anxious about what you will eat or drink. Can you find me some Christians who are not anxious about tomorrow? So I can answer you if our Christians can really succumb to these psychological illnesses. When we are constantly stressed out and anxious about what we will eat tomorrow, how we will build, how we will build our dream home, how we will manage to raise our children, how we will manage this or that, then of course we do not put our trust and our hope and our daily care in God. By this, we don't mean that we will cross our hands and do nothing. Now, the excuse that may be used here is that our time is such that everyone is running, hurrying, running, and you know, Father, someone may say, you know, if I don't run, I will be left behind. What then? Then what will take place is something that happened in the soccer field of Karaiskakis. You know, a great stampede will take place where people from the back of the bleacher stepped all over those in front of them to try to get out. If I don't run, people will outflank me. They will step all over me. Not quite, my friends, not exactly. My answer would be that we have a very bad impression of the gospel. We are not very knowledgeable in the area of the gospel. When we accumulate and hoard so many unnecessary and harmful things, when we think that we must have everything and we try to possess things to better our life, then it is easy to understand, it is inevitable that we will be faced with some neuropsychological problem. At least something minor. Even if we begin to lose sleep, which, by the way, that's the beginning of the psychological illnesses, to begin to lose our sleep, to twist and turn for hours without sleeping. All these, of course, get a hold of people who do not have a true spiritual foundation. I must also tell you that it is specifically mentioned that the faithful who lived during the destruction of Jerusalem, and they lived in the city, they left because they remember the prophetic words of the Lord. When you see the city surrounded by armies, flee, take off. Do not stay inside the city. Who remember this admonition of the Lord? Only the faithful. What does this mean? They were the only ones saved. So we could say that Christ has a secret code, a secret password for every season, and the faithful can sense it when they are in the church. And through the church, they will be saved. What is this secret code? Christ only knows. He knows it. We don't know it. God always reveals it at each different season. But even if you tell me, what if an atomic or a nuclear bomb is used, wouldn't the faithful be killed? My friends, if the faithful are killed, for them, the kingdom of God becomes wide open. So there is no great harm to the faithful. However, when the unbeliever is visited by death, what happens next? The opening of Hades or hell. For this reason, if death comes upon the faithful, there is no great loss. The loss is minimal if it can be considered a loss. But having said all this, we are now approaching the end of this chapter, having analyzed this plague, at least in its real or physical aspect, about what these locusts could be. However, this fifth plague of the fifth trumpet call could also be viewed spiritually or allegorically. St. Andrew of Caesarea says, I believe that we must also consider these peculiar locusts being the warfare of the malicious demons always prepared to do battle against us. Many interpreters of the past and of the present envision as beastly locusts all the heresies and their consequences. For example, the fall of the Pope, the Bishop of Rome, had terrible consequences. I'm being totally objective here. I'm not speaking from passion. There's nothing personal here, believe me. You will see it in a minute in a brief historical overview. It is common knowledge that the West began to misuse the Christian gospel. These misuses and abuses finally led to the Protestant Reformation. This is a well-known fact even by children of the elementary school level. Protestantism would not have been created if Luther, the priest of the Roman Church, did not see these truly unspeakable abuses. However, Protestantism was created, it exists, with many millions of believers without being a church. Protestantism is not a church, but a collection of religious communities, simply because the church consists of the sacrament of holy priesthood. The mystery of the priesthood validates, authenticates the church, and it is validated from the church. More clearly, the priesthood, the presence of the priesthood, authenticates all mysteries, including the mystery of divine Eucharist and holy baptism, which consist the church. But priesthood itself is received inside the church, inside the mystery of Holy Eucharist, during the mystery of divine liturgy. Thus, the mystery of priesthood is received and validated inside the mystery of the divine liturgy, so the priesthood consists the church and it is validated by the church. These two are indispensably connected, and since Protestantism dispensed the mystery of holy orders, let's not waste our time thinking them as churches. But do you perceive the seriousness of this dilemma? This is something that could make the head of the sincere Orthodox Christian spin to think, how could all these people reach salvation? What will happen to them? And all this from the fall of the Pope. It is also known that the Roman Church adulterated the spirit of the gospel and from crucifixional, cross-bearing, changed it to secular or socio-political. So Rome transmuted the church into a socio-political organism. This is not difficult to understand when we speak about the Church of Rome and the Vatican, because the Vatican is an official nation and the Bishop of Rome happens to be simultaneously the president, or in previous centuries, the king of the country of the Vatican. So the Bishop of Rome holds ecclesial and political authority. Needless to say, this Western Christian adulteration had severe consequences. It gave birth to Renaissance. It is common knowledge that Renaissance was created from a spirit of rebellion against the Roman Church because people saw this church as a swamp, and its decomposition was natural since this church had essentially died. A certain spirit, a new wave, was now alive in Europe, seeking to liberate people from the church and to return to civilization, politics, and to classical humanism. This is the basis of the spirit of the Renaissance. They reached the point of wishing to mimic the classical architecture of ancient Greece. So Renaissance, which means rebirth and certainly not creation, they did not create anything new. They simply copied the existing arts of ancient Greece. Consequently, and progressively and steadily, Western Christianity was taking steps towards the world and towards secularism, creating Christians of this age and not of the age to come. Christians who view the church was a means of good communication, helpful in their sense of community, to develop a strong community, to enjoy their material goods, and this created various adverse reactions among the different classes of people. This unrest in the area of philosophy, social ways, and reforms led very quickly to atheism. Atheism, my friends, was born in the West. Heresies existed in the East, but they never gave birth to atheism. The phenomenon of atheism never appeared in the 2,000-year history of Eastern Orthodoxy. This is a product of the West. Now, if you pose the argument that atheistic communism developed in the area of Russia, well, this is not by mere coincidence. I must tell you that unfortunately, what preceded this phenomenon was a religious renaissance modeled after and influenced by the Roman Church. So atheism was the result of renaissance even in Russia. So atheism now in due time generated the atheistic socialist systems, with the end result being the full verification of the words of St. James, the brother of God. He writes in his epistle, chapter 4, verses 1 or 2, "Where do wars and fights come from among you? Do they not come from your desires for pleasure that war in your members?" In other words, the seeking of pleasure in what you will eat, what we will drink, how to enjoy our senses, pleasure in what we hear, pleasure in what we see. And St. James continues, "You lust and do not have. You murder and covet and cannot obtain. You fight and war, yet you do not have because you do not ask." This is a very quick overview because our time here does not allow us to do an analytical study of these historical events, but our objective is to offer some pertinent points to justify this fifth plague, from a spiritual viewpoint. Europe, at some point, begins to discover Africa, the Far East, and America. And what does it do? It colonizes. It becomes colonial. And millions of people sigh and grumble under the yoke of colonist Europe. And now I ask, when the missionaries of the Western world of Europe, when they would go to spread the gospel of Christianity in India, in China, the Far East, would they be accepted? And would their acceptance be the same had they not brought along these infections? Because behind this missionary Christian activity was exactly this agenda of real estate possession and colonization. This is precisely why all these adverse reactions were created, and finally atheism being the end result of a cosmopolitan, secularized Christianity, a Christianity used more so as a bait, as an outside cover for the hook of selfish material interests and hedonistic pursuits. All this simply because Europe desired to live lavishly and materialistically. Europe did not have a Christian mindset to simply wish to bring the message of the gospel to Christianize Africa and America and the Far East, to become genuine missionaries like the Byzantines without having ulterior motives and desires of possession. This is very characteristic, and as Greeks we can boast about this. And even to this day, everywhere we go to witness and preach Christ, we do not have a colonist mentality, but we wish to preach Christ with all our heart to those who do not know him. However, this was not the case with Western Christianity. A more recent interpreter states in one of his books while interpreting the Revelation the following. The French Revolution took place in 1789. Now, what is the French Revolution? Of course, it is a number of things, and to this day, many references and many different writers offer various interpretations. But essentially, my friends, it is nothing more than a new agenda, a new initiative towards organized materialistic and atheistic socialist systems. If it wished to declare liberty or equality, this sort of liberty and equality outside and in the absence of God. This is common knowledge to all. The result being that today's world is being governed by this set of values and initiatives. Not to mention that this fact is proclaimed very openly by various methods today, that we are governed by the standards of the French Revolution. The consequences of this agenda brought about exactly what we face today. The dead end of anarchy, rebellion, and ethical deterioration, and the escalation of crime. The Western world, Western Christianity, has reached this dead end because it started out on the wrong foot. This is precisely why the Pope is characterized as Antichristos. Now, you may understand why all this evil started from the Roman Church, because she did not maintain the truth of the gospel. As you can see, there is no passion here. The motive is not to take away from the Latin Church or the Pope. We are simply quoting well-known historical facts. History itself answers the questions to these things. So this entire state of events led humanity to today's reality, the way we know life to be today. We as Greeks have openly accepted the influence of the West, and this for quite some time now. So as we mentioned, this state led humanity to the feelings of insecurity, to psychological diseases, and to all the byproducts that we call Western civilization or Western lifestyle. What do you think is the reality of the Western lifestyle? This feeling of insecurity, the psychosomatic illnesses, the threat of an all-out nuclear war, all the things that torment the men of the West. And this becomes quite obvious when the mystics of the East now come to offer a helping hand. The gurus of Buddhism, the Dalai Lamas of Eastern meditation, and they exclaim, "You pitiful Europeans, learn to relax. You gotta relax. Do you have fears? Sit down in the morning, meditate for an hour or two, loosen up, untie your energies." And why this need for relaxation? Because the man of the West finds himself in this vicious cycle of mental anguish, a lifestyle full of stress, psychosomatic illnesses, the feeling of imbalance, insecurity, and the constant fear of the nuclear war. And we live with all these evils. So all of the above, my friends, torment today's men. And we could say that this entire description of the scenario of this fifth trumpet call essentially presents a rather good picture of the contemporary reality, where people are being tormented from the very things that they were in such a hurry to invent. Please allow me to present a third point of view, even though we don't have a third point here, but actually a mere expansion of the second point of view. This star that fell upon the earth, as the holy text says, this star is the devil. And consequently, the devil wishes to propagate the demonic element inside nature. With this demonic element, he inspired the first created human beings when he suggested to them that when he told them that they can reach theosis or deification without God. They can exist independently of God and without God. They really do not need God. They don't need God as their purpose. So he actually infected our progenitors with this demonic element, and this very subtly. Do you know that this demonic element is constantly and continually whispered to people by the devil even to this day? However, we must be aware that evil is not ontological, meaning that evil does not exist as an entity. It is not existential. The devil is not ontologically evil. He is not an evil creation. The devil was created a good angel, and he became evil. So evil does not exist out there somewhere. Evil is not a universal principle in the philosophical sense. Evil is not a universal principle, regardless of what some dualist philosophical systems may believe. Saint Diadochos of Photiki writes, "Evil does not exist in nature, nor is someone evil by his nature, because God did not create anything evil." What does this mean? That evil exists in the disposition, in the free choice of logical beings. From the moment that I choose to do something evil, then evil takes substance. So it exists in the free will of men, in his disposition and in his actions. So evil exists only because I want it to exist. I wish to do it. So evil does not exist independently as an essence, and this is extremely important. Watch. This is why God places the test of will to the first created Adam and Eve with the two trees of life and of the tree of knowledge, of good and evil. This test will reappear again later to the Hebrews in the desert. I read from Deuteronomy chapter 30 in verses 15 through 19, and God says, "Behold, I gave before you today life and death, good and evil, the blessing and the curse. Choose life so you and your seed can live, So I have placed these choices in front of you. It is up to you to choose life. And by doing this, you and your descendants will live a life full of blessings. From this, we can surmise that the demonic element without God having created it, underline this, it exists in every free and logical being. What is the devil? A good angel who thought of evil all by himself. He created the demonic element. Man can also become a source of evil because he's a logical and free being. Consequently, when God says, before you, I place life and death, the blessing or the curse, even though God exhorts us to choose life, you can create evil inside of you and you can become a source of the demonic element if you so choose. What does the devil do? Precisely this. He pushes men to choose evil if man finally consents. But man himself becomes or is a creator of the demonic element.